Welcome to the Distorted podcast. I'm Rosie and I'm the radio coordinator here. I've been part of the team since the start of 2023, but before then I just left university with a degree in music business and I was overwhelmed with the variety of job roles in the music industry. So this is a series all about those jobs. I'll be speaking to the people that play a part within the industry, from managers and label bosses to producers and venues. Today, I'm chatting to James Medina. James is an executive producer here at Distorted and has worked here for 9 years. During his career, James has been a resident DJ, a radio presenter, label owner, and freelance producer. And he began his role as an executive producer last year. Hope you enjoy it.
No, I don't have an official qualification of any sort for music, I don't think. Just a new kind of style or sound comes around and you go, yep, dance music just changed. When I started out, I wanted to be a DJ. Then I wanted to be a producer. Then I wanted to be an artist. Then I wanted to like be able to make all of these different styles of music.
So we'll start from the beginning. What does a day in the life of an executive producer look like?
juggling. Spinning various plates and trying to not let them drop. Off the top of my head, it is managing probably 5 weekly radio shows of my own that I produce, 3 monthly shows kind of that I work on that I produce, keeping an eye on the production team and kind of the shows that they're working on, making sure that they don't have any problems and everything is running as smoothly as it could do, should do. Also involves sorting everyone's music for the week. It involves meeting with directors and making strategies for upcoming shows and prospective clients. It means trying to streamline other production processes and make things quicker and more efficient. And then I run out of time and we start it all again the day after.
So would you say no day is the same?
It's funny, like, in a way, every day is the same and also no day is the same. Like, I'm always working on essentially the same stuff, but it's ever evolving. Like, a show, a project, whatever I'm working on is never the same. Wouldn't say from maybe the week to next, but certainly from 1 month to the next. Like, it has moved on, like, a month down the line. So, yeah, constantly evolving.
Nice. And you said that you are quite creative in this role. Would that be fair to say?
I would like to think that I'm creative in the role. I like the idea of being creative and bringing a kind of creative attitude to it. The idea of working on projects, on shows, on kind of bigger picture stuff without thinking about it creatively would be a bit boring. Like, essentially, there's a little bit of my brain which would like to think it's an artist. Mm-hmm. We probably keep that bit of our brain quite quiet and we like being artistic where possible. So yeah, bring creativity, bring ideas, bring a kind of vision and a concept to stuff wherever we can do that. And that's probably the part of it that I enjoy the most.
I was going to say, is that your favourite part?
Yes.
And then on to counter that, what is the most challenging part of this role for you?
Dealing with other people's incompetencies.
Okay. Expand.
I don't historically, like, historically, I am not an employed person. I have not worked officially for a business with a payslip up until I took this role. I've been freelance since I left uni, so 15, pushing 20 years. And the idea that I now have to work with other people who maybe don't do things exactly how I do them is challenging. And then also we have, delivery dates and sort of schedules for clients, which are difficult to manage with touring, etc. Having things when I want them and having things done how I want them is, more of a challenge than I anticipated.
So when did you stop being freelance?
May 2023.
But you were always at Distorted, just freelance?
Always. I've always been here. No, I've not. I was here from 2015, maybe. I got my first freelance role,
And what role was that?
I think it was literally writing a script.
Okay.
I remember getting a text off Ollie, who is a producer here, saying Nick and Andy are after some like people who might be capable of doing some of the work that we need doing, like send them your CV, get in touch. So I think I constructed some sort of CV type thing in a very music industry and avant-garde kind of fashion, sent it over, and then got to do none of the things that I thought I was going to do. And they were like, here, can you write scripts? And I was like, actually, yes, I can, because I did a degree in politics and I quite like writing.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about before this. So you did a degree not music related?
No, I don't have an official qualification of any sort for music, I don't think.
Oh, so how did you know that you wanted to have a career in music?
I was going to say, because it's pretty much the only thing that I've ever wanted to do. That's a bit of a lie, because there was definitely a significant period of my life where I had no idea what I wanted to do. But I've always loved music, from the age of, without going way back into it, but from the age of seven or eight, but I picked up my first pair of decks at kind of 15. And from then on, any opportunity to be involved in music was something that I took. And it's just, it's experience that's kind of got me to where I am, I think, expertise and experience rather than actual qualifications.
So you left university with a politics degree.
Ish.
And then how have you progressed into music from leaving university?
Me and a mate both were finishing uni around the same time, I think, and the sort of 4 years we'd spent at uni, we were DJing, we were running club nights, we'd started dabbling in production, and we'd picked up copies of Ableton, very early doors, probably live version 3 rather than 12 that we're on now. And
that reflects how long ago it was.
Yeah, we'd been playing around with this stuff, and we'd kind of realised how much we enjoyed, I wouldn't say doing it professionally at this point, but being involved in the music scene, being involved in the industry was great fun, sort of meeting people and just working with something you love was great fun. And I remember having the conversation over the phone, and we were just like, if we don't kind of try and make this work somehow now, then we don't want to get to the point down the line where we regret not giving it a go.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, right, that's it. At this point, we are taking these production trials and sort of the DJing knowledge that we have, and we're going to try and make some money out of it.
And how did that go?
Fair to middling.
Was it hard at first to make a living out of it?
It was hard at first and after at first also.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not easy, full stop. I don't think doing something you love for a job is something that comes easily or something that you should necessarily even be able to find easy. It should be hard work. You have to realise that it is still work. You do have to treat it properly. You do have to graft. You do have to pull some insane shifts for very little money.
And I guess if you're passionate about it, is that what motivates you to keep pushing? Because I suppose it could be quite easy to give up if the graft is so hard.
I think probably what motivates me more is simply the idea of not doing something that I like doing.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of working in a job that I have no connection with or sort of don't enjoy kind of working on the projects or kind of meeting the people who are involved in it. The idea of doing something where I don't enjoy those processes, that sounds fairly hideous to me. So that's what motivates me to kind of keep working in music, because it's full of cool shit, basically.
Agreed. What do you think the most crucial trait someone should possess to be in your role or a production role?
An ear for what sounds good. You have to be able to hear a track, a vocal, a piece of speech, a hook, a song, like anything kind of related to what you're doing. And even if it's not what's normal or expected, if it sounds good, and if you know what sounds good, then you can probably make everything else work. But if you haven't got that little intuition as to something that just clicks and kind of makes something work really well, then the rest of it might be a bit pointless.
Yeah, it's a great answer. I guess, would you also say someone needs to be organized, time management, all them key things?
Oh, yeah,
well,
all of the boring, obvious stuff. Like, yeah, that, it almost goes without saying.
But the crux of it is a good ear.
Yeah. Like, I'm struggling to think about it from a radio production perspective, but from a DJing perspective or from a music production perspective, you can hear stuff that isn't necessarily very good or isn't the finished product, but you can hear something in it where you're like, it doesn't matter that that's not quite there yet, because there is something that is different. There is something where you kind of, it makes you take notice.
Yeah.
And it makes you realize that that person has got something different or is considering it in a different way to what you would have expected or the way that you do it. And that's the key thing for me. Never really thought about that before.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Do you think, tying that in then, do you think that's the most rewarding aspect of your job, getting a product that's not finished, that has potential, and then making that the best it can be and putting it out into the world?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, sort of hearing, kind of working with clients and them sort of vaguely or even very well understanding kind of what we do, but not necessarily having this idea of all of the possibilities and kind of how a final product could sound, working with them to kind of find something that fits perfectly with their ethos and their direction, their goals, their ideas, and sort of their artists, that sort of thing, and kind of creating that product that ties in with all of that stuff, for me is, yeah, the rewarding bit.
And I guess that's what motivates you as well.
Yeah.
In your job.
And also, working on something that's a bit more forward-thinking. I've loved radio for ever.
Mm-hmm.
I remember coming home after, like, drunk nights out in the park as a 14, 15-year-old, whatever, and staying up until 2, 3 in the morning to listen to the Essential Mix on Radio 1, recording it, and sort of being fascinated by the different way in which radio at that time of night was presented.
Mm-hmm.
The music obviously was a significant, like, factor, but the presenting and the overall sound of it was also different. That was interesting, and that's probably the thing that sort of sparked my longer-term interest in radio, but also the idea that you can have radio shows that aren't necessarily for the radio, that can be consumed on demand, on different platforms, with a more bespoke, kind of more targeted audience. That is also fun.
Yeah. So have you always been into dance music?
Yes.
For as long as you can remember?
Yes.
Where's that stem from? From listening to Radio 1? Or is it deeper?
Oh, man. I can actually answer it quite specifically. I can't say how old I was, but I remember when I was young enough to not know like what was going on and sort of where I was going in the car with my parents, that there was one specific tape that used to get played in the car where there was a couple of tracks that had no words and they were my favourite tracks. And that stemmed a lifelong interest in things that don't have guitars in and things that don't have words in.
Yeah.
It kind of all evolved from there. It's only in later life that I've come to appreciate actual songs and kind of stuff that one might call actual music.
Fair enough.
And now, yeah, I listen to all sorts, a wide variety of music, but it is mostly dance music and mostly electronic music.
And has your taste in dance music, so there's so many genres in dance music, has your taste evolved throughout your career, depending on your jobs or the shows you're working on?
Yeah, I like working on new shows where I think I'm not going to like the music, because inevitably, in a very short period of time, I will end up liking the music, because you kind of realise that everything has its place. And even if you think something's not for you, you can appreciate that it might well be for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seeing its merits is important. Seeing what music can do for people is important. And that just makes you go, oh, okay, it might not be that bad. And then you start to look at it in a slightly more positive light. And then you go, oh, actually, I quite like this song.
Yeah.
Also helps when you hear it like five times on repeat or like week after week. And you go, oh, yeah, like I could have sworn I used to hate this music, but apparently not.
And I suppose that could be quite a challenging aspect of your job is working with genres that you're not particularly interested in, but still having to produce the best product.
Yeah, it's a nice challenge. I always like, I'm not going to turn down the challenge of something like that, irrespective of whether it's not particularly liking the music or not being particularly skilled in some other area of the project I'm working on. If there is a challenge and I'm going to have to work a bit harder or work a bit differently to make it happen or to make it work how I want it to work, then that's going to be a more enjoyable process. I'm going to get more out of it if it's a challenge.
Mm. Yeah.
I kind of want to ask you questions back.
Do it.
But I can't think of anything right now.
Well, if you think
I'm so
of
busy
anything,
like thinking about how to concisely put my answers across.
Ask me anything.
AMA.
What is the most helpful resource that's helped you along your way in your career and trying to find your path in the music industry?
The most helpful resource?
I guess when I was at university, I was always told that my network is my net worth. So maybe has your network been the most helpful resource in your career? Or is it learning new technology or doing courses?
It's more on the latter half. I'd say it's a blindness or like sort of resilience to want to just learn things myself. Like if I don't know how something works or if I can't do it myself, I'd rather try and figure it out before asking for help.
Okay.
I'd rather have an understanding of what it is I can't do before then reaching out to someone who has maybe a better understanding and can point me in the right direction. So the network is important, but it's not kind of the first thing. The first thing is like, I'm like, right, I can tell if I'm doing something and it's probably not good enough. So before we speak to anyone else, we need to do it better and we need to find a way of doing it better. And that is where we often just YouTube tutorials, or we try things in a different way, or we just think about things differently and try and sort of break the rules a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, come at it with a different approach.
And have you had a mentor that's been your go-to person if you've needed help in that respect?
Not specifically. There's a couple of people that I've worked with closely for a long time. There is a whole group of people I grew up with from like the age of 13, 14, 15, when we all kind of got into electronic music and sort of, well, specifically like happy hardcore and trance, who've all gone on to either still be very much involved in consuming music or working in music. So yeah, there's a hardcore few of us where they're not mentors. We're just like a close group of friends who happen to have some decent experience in the music industry between us.
And help each other out when you need it.
Yeah.
If you could change one thing about the industry, what would it be? And why?
So, you know, when I asked if there's anything I should think about before I sat down to talk, that is one of them that I definitely should have thought about. Off the top of my head, wow.
Yeah, this is just off the top.
One thing I could change within the music industry, I think currently the lack of representation and diversity is an obvious issue. But what I love about the music industry is it is still a business, or it's still made up of businesses, and it still sort of reacts as businesses should do to its consumers. So if people in general want to see something from the music industry, it won't take too long for that to start happening.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a case with diversity. I think there's a lot more female, non-binary artists coming through, especially in the dance music industry.
It's also just excellent to see a kind of a new generation of people almost making a return to how I understood dance music and club culture to be when I was younger.
And what's like, that?
It was weird and wonderful and underground and like kind of scary in a way, but you would be accepted and anyone could be friends. Like there was literally no judgment anywhere for anything. And having a bit of a return or slowly returning to that kind of ethos is quite right and correct, in my opinion. It's what dance music was built on.
Yeah,
it's exactly how we should operate.
I agree. I always said I was born too soon. I wish I was born in that era where there was underground raves. And I remember watching a video and there's no phones or anything and it just looked epic.
Yeah, I agree. I was sort of, as a Mancunian, I was always disappointed that I never got the opportunity to really experience the Hacienda. Mm-hmm. I think anyone who was born after a certain era and didn't, like in Manchester, and didn't get to do that is a bit gutted and jealous of those that did. But everyone has their own experiences when you're getting into dance music. Like I got the opportunity to go to Gatecrasher and the kind of the super clubs of that era, Cream and God's Kitchen and stuff, and go to like their big festivals when they first started throwing them. And lots of other people didn't get to experience that in the way that they used to exist.
Yeah.
Lots of people nowadays don't know kind of going to a small 300 capacity kind of nightclub that runs every single goddamn week with resident DJs, where it's not about the DJ that's performing, it's about the people that go to the club. There never used to be like the huge lineups of 50 plus DJs where you're paying 60, 70 quid a ticket. Like it was a tenner on the door max. So yeah, everyone has their own thing that I think other people could, maybe should be jealous of.
Definitely. But yeah, that era for me is the thing I'm jealous of, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, I've also got to pick up on the no phones thing. Like, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm okay with the phones.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm not. It's my pet hate.
I'm like, it's just, things have changed.
No, I don't like it. Because I'm small anyway, when I'm at a gig, I'm watching it through someone's phone.
Yeah, I guess that could be annoying.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be permanently the person saying, can I get on your shoulders, please?
Yeah, because I can't see or hear a thing.
Yeah, okay.
What do you see as a significant trend or development in the industry?
In dance music, I currently love the fact that there is, again, like there's a generation of people that didn't experience a certain style of dance music that I remember. So they've kind of come back to it, or cyclically it's come back round, and they are now putting a different spin on it. So the fact that music is now faster, more aggressive, more fun, and the rules appear to have kind of been thrown out the window again, I think it's great. It's just, it happens every so often, every 5, 10, maybe even 15 years. Just a new kind of style or sound comes around and you go, yep, dance music just changed And that's always for the better.
And I guess you kind of have to keep on top of these trends.
Yeah, I mean, listening, like searching out music myself when I work with so much music, I find really difficult. Everyone always asks me for recommendations. And whilst obviously, as someone who considers themselves a DJ, or like, as far as I'm concerned, my taste in music is the best taste in music. Mm-hmm. It would be foolish for me to think anything else.
That's a good way to look at it. I've never thought about that before.
But like finding that music to consider the best taste in music is a challenge, because the last thing I want to do at the end of the day is almost listen to music for pleasure.
Yeah. So you just spoke about finding music. How do you find music?
Well, fortunately, or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, every Monday morning, I have to sift through about 350 brand new tracks and work out who I think of the people that we work with might want to hear a certain selection of them. So that's a great way.
And how do you get that music? Is that just sent through your inbox, or do you have...
They are various promo mail out companies connected to my various email addresses that have received such campaigns over the years, to all of the Disordered team that have received such stuff over the years. So yeah, it's a combination of kind of everyone's sort of mail outs that land in their inbox through InFlight. And yeah, so I discover a lot of stuff that way. I keep an ear to Radio 1 on a Friday night. I listen to Spotify for a few hours at least once a week and just allow it to kind of shuffle through. It's taken a lot of curating the algorithm to get it to ignore the stuff that I really don't want to hear, mm-hmm. and to make sure it does focus on the new and interesting stuff. I'm aware that it's probably pushing the same stuff to a lot of other people.
And what do you do with them tracks that you like? Do you put them into a playlist?
Yeah, they get favorited, they get shared, they get added to a playlist. I have a couple of friends who do the same. We have a little beer and music group on WhatsApp where we share all of our thoughts about craft beer and new music.
That sounds like a great group chat.
Or really sad, depending. And then my girlfriend loves music, so she's always sending me new stuff. Yeah, just constantly sharing music between sort of people I know.
Your community, yeah. And also your work.
Yes, and also, yeah, and the obviously, like, aside from the tracks that we kind of receive to then give to clients that we're working with, they will also source their own music. And sometimes I'll be like, that record's amazing, stealing it.
So are there some shows you put together where you have creative control of all the music that goes in the shows, or do the artists provide you with tracks?
In essence, there are shows where I have complete creative control, but it's not complete because it's all based on a conversation when setting up the show with the client about what they need the music in the show to do and what it should be representing and who it's targeted at. For example, Alok's show, he was a well-established artist in Brazil, obviously had a massive audience in Brazil because there was a lot of people in Brazil. And we started working on his show when his management team and his label team were looking to kind of grow his audience outside of Brazil. So we were like, right, we need to bring elements of the European sound into the show. We need to bring elements of kind of a more commercial aspect to it. We need to bring kind of new and exciting artists to it. So we developed a show that allowed us to do all of these things and have little opportunities throughout the 60 minutes to just bring in this different music. So whilst I might have most of the control over what that music is, it's based on a conversation about what the show is with his team.
Almost like you've been given a brief.
Yeah.
And you're fulfilling that brief.
Yeah. And every show sort of works slightly differently. Sometimes the artists pick out 30 tracks and I know that we're never going to fit all of those into an hour. So we just discard the ones that don't work or feel a bit out of place. Sometimes the artist or the label team might provide only 10 tracks, and then it's up to me or whoever's working on the show to kind of fill in the gaps and make it as exciting as possible or as diverse as possible with the extra creative room space we've got. Sometimes the artist or the label pick all of the tracks, and then it's up to us to just find the best order.
Right. So it really varies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you still write the scripts for them? I know when you came into Distorted, that was your first job, but do you still do that, or is that the job of someone else's now?
No, I still do that. There are certain clients where language and personality kind of restrict how much license you've got to play around in a script. They have to kind of by nature be fairly generic and fairly standard. There'll be opportunities to talk about music, of course. Wherever possible, we'll put across personal stories, little anecdotes, and kind of get that personal connection and that personal touch, because for me, that's really, really important. But there isn't much room to have fun with some of them. On the other hand, writing scripts for Deadmau5, for Joel, is a more creative experience, because he is not an artist who necessarily follows the norms. So, yeah. The idea of describing something like over-enthusiastically and positively just doesn't work. Like, tracks are never amazing. Tracks are not bad. Tracks are quite cool. And you have more scope to be weird and wonderful with it and say some stupid stuff that you wouldn't normally have expected to be able to say on the radio.
Get away with. Yeah. Yeah.
So I love doing them. It's
more
great fun.
More leeway.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also have some scripts that are recorded in AI.
Yeah, I was going to come on to AI, actually. Is that something that you're using more in your work, or do you not use it at all?
I try to use. It tends to fail me a bit. It's not quite there for me personally yet. I've tried to use it with regards to my scheduling, tried to use it with regards to my script writing, I've tried to use it, all of the various pieces of software that are there for arrangements and for mixing, and it's not quite there. Basically, I think I've been doing the job in so many forms for so long that I've created, in my mind, the quickest, most efficient way of doing it, and AI can't beat it yet.
Do you think it might do in the future?
I kind of hope so. Because the jobs that you don't necessarily need to really, really think about, if something can take over that would be, I'm okay with that.
So you write the scripts, you produce the show, and then what happens to the product? Do you have much dealing with the product once you've completed producing it, or is that the job of someone else?
I think the way I've always viewed it is when a radio show is complete, it is then essentially up to the client to do what they want to do with it. They might have made that decision and I might be able to help them with it, or we might have had a conversation before we started about what the opportunities are, but my mind has mainly lived within the realms of production. So, yes, we might produce shows and also syndicate shows and deal with 500 radio stations worldwide. But at that point, I hand over to you.
Yes.
Because I don't know anything about that. Or I do, but like to the point where I go, I can't remember. It changes so fast. It's just not something I've really worked in or got an area of expertise. So I can deal with production all day long.
But I would still argue that you are very much hands-on with it, because we have regular meetings about syndication for the shows that you produce, and I don't think you just hand it over to me. I think you're very hands-on.
No, I guess there's a slightly bigger picture element of the way to kind of look at a client and a show. As much as my brain has existed within that realm of production, you do have to consider, like, what is an artist doing over the coming months? Where are they going to be touring? Where are they going to be playing? What is the label they work with doing? What are their releases? Like, is their sound changing? Are they working with different people? Have they got sponsorships? Have they changed management teams or PR teams? And all of this just kind of ties in loosely or not so loosely in some instances into kind of what is done with that final product and how that final product sounds and how it lands with people. So all of these things need considering, and that is where the spinning plates come back into play.
Yeah, because you're constantly trying to keep an eye out for that, trying to listen to new tracks, trying to come up with creative ideas for the shows.
Yeah.
And trying to manage a team of people.
If not manage, just work with and kind of understand what everyone's doing. It's quite easy to kind of keep on top of what everyone does here within Distorted. We can catch up easily, but when you're working with people across multiple time zones, where you've got teams of people working with an artist who aren't even all in the same time zone, where you've got people who are on tour 300 days out of 365, where you've got people who are sometimes not the most professional and not that good at getting back to you, like it all makes things a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I can vouch for that too. Yeah. But I guess that's another perk of the job, is speaking to people in Brazil and Mexico and Australia. It adds another aspect. And I think you've just been to Miami Music Week as well.
I have just been to Miami Music Week. My second time to the States, my first time in Miami.
And I bet that was good.
It was excellent. It's not what I expected. I kind of went thinking it would be all of the weird things that Miami is. And whilst that is true, there was lots of really cool stuff as well. And I've never seen a place where it's just a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot. It is a lot.
I can imagine.
I'm not sure I've really processed it any more than that at this point. It's a lot.
Yeah. But whilst you were there, you were meeting up with potential clients?
Yeah.
Or?
So there's always a kind of an ongoing conversation with existing clients about stuff, all of the important things, all the things that are happening. There is always kind of ongoing conversations with prospective clients about what could we do, what might we be able to do, when might be a good time to do it, what would be a good project to launch in association with kind of what, depending on what they've got going on. And it turns out, I think, from my one singular experience, I'm not best placed to answer, from my one singular experience in Miami, that there is a really good place to kind of really speak to people about radio show concepts, audio content concepts, with a more overarching feel to everything. It's just a really good place to chat and
meet people.
Spend a bit of time talking about what we do and what the possibilities might be. More so than where I've been to on other kind of music industry excursions anyway.
And I guess it's a lot easier to do that in person than perhaps over a Zoom call.
Yeah, I mean, I would love people to respond to an email as well as they do to in-person stuff, but they don't.
Yeah.
And when you are passionate and interested in something, it does really come across. And being able to show that to someone and being able to show that you have an interest in what they do and being excited about what the possibilities might be comes across so much better in person. If it happens to be 30 degrees in the sunshine at the same time, I'm not complaining.
An extra bonus.
Yeah.
I guess to wrap it up, what advice would you give to your younger self or someone coming into the music industry?
Take every opportunity that you get. Search out, hunt out opportunities. I personally was, when I started out, I wanted to be a DJ. Then I wanted to be a producer. Then I wanted to be an artist. Then I wanted to like be able to make all of these different styles of music. But also in the kind of search for kind of roles and jobs to keep your head afloat and kind of keep above water, different things come up and then you try them and you go, oh, that's really cool. Like, I didn't know that I'd quite like speaking in front of a microphone to people on the radio. Turns out I loved doing that.
Yeah.
So
trying as many things as you can.
Try things out.
Do you think internships would be useful for something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sort of seeing the way that two interns have kind of changed the dynamic of Distorted for the better is incredible. And knowing that those opportunities exist for people wanting to get into the music industry is great, because they definitely didn't exist when I was starting out. Because I don't think people really understood quite how big the music industry was going to become at that point.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a big thing, but it was not what it is now. And I don't think people quite understand how many roles there are available and how big some of these teams of people working behind artists and brands can be.
And I think on that, everyone's a lot, majority of people are willing to help as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember there was a couple of guys, a couple of young lads in Miami who came up to me, and I was clearly bored or disinterested by what was happening. I stood by myself just sipping a beer, and they were very young and very enthusiastic, but they were like, right, we're playing a game. DJ, punter, or music industry person. And I was like, oh, right, okay, we're doing this, are we? This is a lot, but I kind of respect the hustle. I was like, what do you think? And they were like, we think you're here as a party goer. And I was like, absolutely not. I am here as a music industry professional. But then we proceeded to just have a chat about what they were doing, and they were just asking all sorts of honest, like kind of naive, but in a good way, questions. They were just like, just tell us about some stuff. Just talk to us about what you do. And I was like doing the same to them. So yeah, just ask questions.
Ask questions. Be authentic.
Be authentic, 100%. Like, yeah. You have to be authentic. You have to be yourself. Don't pretend to be anyone else. People see through you for a start. Be nice.
That's a key one.
Do be nice.
Please be nice.
Please be nice. Like, the music industry has a rep for people not necessarily being nice. Whilst it might have been true once upon a time, I don't think it's really true anymore. I think most people I work with are genuinely lovely folk, even if they might first come across as a bit weird or scary.
Yeah, that was my one piece of advice at uni was, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
And that was plastered as a motto in the corridors. So probably the best one to take away.
Don't be a dick. Be yourself. Ask questions. Try anything you can possibly think of. Give it a go. Worst case scenario, you cock it up. Yeah. Or you don't like it.
Perfect.
Best case scenario, you get a job in the music industry.
Yeah, and it's a great place to be.
It is.
Well, thanks for joining me.
Excellent. I can't wait to do it again and turn like all of the questions around on you.
Thanks for listening. Like and subscribe to catch the next one. And if you'd like to ask our guests any questions, or if there are any job roles that you'd love to know more about, then get in touch with me via LinkedIn @RosieBlack.